I'm Dr. Don McDonald. Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse, the podcast. I believe one of the most valuable things you can give yourself as a chiropractor is taking time. Time to become more inspired, present, and focused. Weekly, I'll be bringing you stories of triumph, mindset shifts, and lessons from people who are breaking through their limitations. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now, let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host, and today I get to speak to a fellow Canadian, except I'm going to go across to Eastern Canada, to Waterloo, Ontario, and I get to speak with Dr. Nicole Lederman, and I got to meet her when she was teaching at Parker. We got to hang out in Rome. We've been at a whole bunch of seminars together. And I'm just excited because she's the pediatric master. I actually brought her to Edmonton to do a seminar. She's the one who showed me and taught me how to do Webster's technique. So if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't even know how to do that. So I'm in gratitude to you for that. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
That's awesome. So you have a great story because you've been all over the place and done lots of stuff. And so
a little bit unique, yeah.
Yeah. So why don't we just take you right back to the beginning? And tell us, like, how did you even decide to be an amazing chiropractor that you are now?
Well, I was in university. I always knew from a really early age that I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to help people. I wanted to be in the health field. And of course, as a young woman, the only experience that I had was a medical doctor. And that's where I thought I was going. But when I was in university, my grandmother was really, really sick. And she was in the hospital. And I can remember my mom wanting to thank the doctor for all his service because it was Christmas time. And my grandma was in the hospital. It wasn't looking good, but my mom wanted to express some gratitude. And she stopped the doctor in the hallway as he's like backing away from her, you know. And she said, you know, doctor, I just want to talk to you for a minute. And he turned and looked at her and said, listen, your mother's not getting any better. She's never coming out of the hospital. There's no hope. And my mom just, you know, was shell-shocked. And she said, I just wanted to say thank you. Wow. You know, and he just, he didn't even say anything. He just basically walked away. And from that moment, I thought, I don't think this is what I want to do. If this is what it's all about and this much stress and just another pill to not get any better, this doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started looking at other things. And it's kind of interesting because in my last year of university, I had applied to, you know, I still wasn't sure because I hadn't had that experience. And I applied to PT, I applied to OT, I applied to med school, I applied to chiropractic school, and I didn't get into anything, right? Which was a blessing in disguise because it made me look and say, what do I really want to do? Right? So I sat back and I started getting under chiropractic care because I was having migraine headaches. And it was actually a student at CMCC, believe it or not, who told me the chiropractic story. And I went, oh my God, that makes so much sense. You know, and from there, I started working for a chiropractor, and he was gracious enough to pay for us to go to a bunch of different seminars. So I went to the Chiropractic Masters, was one of my first ones, and DeMartini just lit me on fire, John DeMartini.
Awesome.
I can remember, the second time I applied, I had my interview, and I had seen Dr. DeMartini the night before at a master seminar. And from the airport to driving home to my parents' house in Scarborough, I don't even remember the drive home because I was so like, oh my God, you know, my mind was blown. And the next day going to my interview, you know, I had all these things planned of all the right things I was going to say. And I went driving along Lawrence Avenue to driving towards CMCC, speeding, not even realize, cop pulls me over. And I said, oh my God, I'm going to be late. I have my interview. This is like my whole life is riding on this moment. And the cop is like, well, I'm very sorry, miss, but I have to give you a ticket. So can you just speak to me quickly? So he did. And I peeled out of there and he didn't stop me again, thank God. And I went to my interview and it was just the best interview. You know, I just had a great time and I spoke my truth. And I thought, you know what, if they don't want me, they don't want me. That's fine. But that's what I did. And I got in and the rest is history. Here I am. 18 years later.
That's pretty cool. So you went to CMCC?
I did.
And you graduated in?
2000.
2000.
Yeah.
And then what did you do after that, right after that?
Well, right after that, I traveled for a bit. I gave my first chiropractic adjustment for fee in Salzburg, Austria.
Oh, wow.
I walked in and they had a sign up that someone needed a chiropractor, and it was an Australian guy doing adventure tours. So And he's like, I haven't been home to get adjusted. So I need an adjustment because I'm not functioning well. And my asthma is getting bad. Right? No neck pain or back pain.
Yeah.
So I adjusted him in the bar, in the hostel, on a stool, did some Gonstead, and he paid me, and I was able to go out for a nice dinner instead of, you know, bread and cheese. So when I came back, I was looking for an associateship, but my husband decided he wanted to go to chiropractic school too. So I didn't want to open up anything. So I started doing long-term fill-ins for chiropractors. So mostly maternity leave practices. So mm-hmm. I would go in for 3 or 4 months to practice, take over for them, and then hand the practice back to them. And that was fabulous because I would go into practices that were established and I would learn a ton. You know, I adjusted, you know, 300 patients a week in some practices. So coming from school to, you know, being in clinic.
That must be crazy.
I was a pretty busy intern, but, you know, to go to 300 patients a week, you learn right from the beginning that this is possible.
Yeah.
You know, and people are getting quality care this way. It's not, you know, those stories that you hear, well, it's high volume. Those people don't care. They're just, I mean, these were great practices, great patients getting great results. So it was a fabulous way to start.
Awesome. And how long did you do the locums for?
I did that for almost 3 years.
Yeah.
And then from there, my husband and I moved to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And when we met Dr. Mancini, he said, how can I help you come to Texas? And I said, you could give me a job. So I was just very blunt. And I guess he liked that. So he started the ball rolling and I had an interview in the clinics and I ended up teaching in the clinic and on the academic side at Parker for 11 years before coming back to Canada.
That's wild. That's cool. So when you went to CMCC, were you already up to date on the philosophy of chiropractic and kind of understood it all, or were you just kind of still more in the mechanistic part of it?
I was pretty philosophical when I went to CMCC already, mm-hmm. Because I had those great experiences of being at the Masters. I mean, I saw, before I went to school, I saw DeMartini, Mark Victor Hansen, I saw Bob Hoffman, I saw Jim Sigafoos, all of these things before, Jill LaMarche.
Yeah.
Actually, I met him before I ever, you know, went to school and everything. So these were all mentors that started me and, you know, gave me books to read and things to do. So I was pretty gung-ho when I went to school and that made CMCC a little bit hard because it is.
I was going to say, so how was that for you then? Because that'd be tough. Cause I know my sister went to CMCC and we already had the philosophy down pretty pat and they had to do stuff off campus and they had to be careful when they did stuff because they said that was voodoo stuff. They're doing leg checks and all weird stuff.
Well, when I went to CMCC, it seemed to be a pretty good time at CMCC. I mean, we definitely had some very mechanistic, you know, non-believers, if you will, in chiropractic who taught us. But we also had some great chiropractors who taught us.
Right.
And we had a Thompson Club. We had a Gonstead Club. We had a pediatric club. We had the ICA Club, which I was part of a couple of those things. And then we also had something called Friends in Chiropractic. And there was one of my colleagues who started that group, and he would bring in people like Peter Amlinger and Cliff Hardick and some of the great chiropractors here in Ontario, in the Toronto area, to help mentor us and show us what was possible. So it was good from that perspective.
Yeah.
And right at the beginning, I knew that I had to keep myself sort of dipped in the philosophy and the purpose of chiropractic. So a friend of ours in first year knew about Dynamic Essentials, DE, when Dr. Sid was still alive. And he said, hey, my chiropractors go to this. Do you want to go? So I sat in a minivan with 7 other people and drove. Oh, no, that was the second year because we did it twice. My first year, my girlfriend and I sat in her Ford Focus with another friend, like lying across the back, drove straight through the night to Atlanta to go to DE. And again, introduced to more chiropractors. And it was so great because people would just take you under their wing. Oh, you guys are from Canada. Come, like, let me show you how to adjust. Let me show you this. We'd stay up in the hotel bar, you know, talking philosophy till 2-3 in the morning and then get up and do it all over again the next day.
Yeah.
So, and then the next year, Dr. Sigafoos is one, Chris Sigafoos, paid for 2 suites for us and we brought 30 people back down for DE from CMCC.
Oh, that's awesome. So,
Yeah, it was fun.
Because it's so important as a student, right? Just to surround yourself with those types of people. Because I find that, you know, practice is so isolated that if you don't get any of that in school, it's like super hard afterwards, right? It's a lot easier to get that focus there. And so what I know, you like right now your big focus is pediatrics, and and when did you start to kind of dip yourself more into the pediatrics end of it?
I would say probably by my second year in school, I knew that I wanted to focus on women's health and pediatrics.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, people would ask you things like, you know, when you graduate, I want to ask you this question about women's health, like, you know, getting on the pill or getting off the pill or these different, you know, just different things that women tend with. And I'm like, well, I could tell you that now. Right. But there were so many questions and there weren't a lot of answers I felt for young women and what was healthy for them. And, you know, I met so many people with headaches and, you know, they'd be on the pill and they were on the pill from the time they were 12 or 13 years old. You know, right. They never knew what their body was capable of because they've never experienced what their body is capable of.
Right.
So I just knew early on that I wanted to do that and help people do that.
And so did you start taking any extra seminars in pediatrics while you're still in school, or did you wait to expand after?
No, so we had a pediatrics club, which I was part of. And then we also I started the ICPA program probably in second year.
Yep.
And did it, you know, through graduation so that I was already certified by the time I graduated.
Yeah.
And that was a fabulous program. Mm-hmm. So, and even still, I still go back and dip my feet in because I don't know everything, you know, and things change and you get different perspectives. So every now and then I'll see an ICPA seminar that has changed since when I took it.
Right.
I'll be like, oh, that's really interesting. I'm going to go take that. And I love all of Dr. Mike Hall's stuff. So I've taken lots of stuff with him.
Yeah.
And you know, different online stuff. There's a Martin Rosen is a great resource. Lots of different things. I've taken lots and lots of different things.
Well, that's cool. So what was it like to spend 4 years of locuming and then all of a sudden go to Parker and then start teaching? Like, how was that?
It was a big shift. The locums were great. Like I said, I learned a lot, and the chiropractors that I worked for were very gracious and very generous with the stuff that they had. They would let me do their new patient talks. I would go out and do screenings for them. They would let me, you know, photocopy all their paperwork and stuff like that. So I would, you know, start to realize, well, I like this, I don't like this, that kind of stuff. I got to practice all my communication with their patients instead of my patients. Which was fun. And so then going to school was a bit different. It was a much different pace.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the students to be as on fire as I was, right? So, and I really took to heart, I started off in the student clinic. So I was teaching the students how to adjust, how to, you know, patient management, that kind of thing. And I just really wanted them to get their hands on, and I really wanted to focus on being the kind of clinic doctor that I always wanted to have.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So to lift them up and inspire them, not telling them everything that they're doing wrong.
Right.
Let's look at all the great things that you're doing and then what we still need to work on. How can we get even better?
Right.
So that was a lot of fun.
And so you enjoyed that quite a bit. And then you went.
I was surprised to enjoy that as much as I did, actually.
And then you went to teach like a class. What classes did you actually teach then?
So when I first started, there was a class called Clinic One, and it was like the introduction to being in the clinic. So it was the first trimester students who would go in and do observations in the student clinic. And so I taught them, at that time, I was teaching them from James Chestnut's work about the scientific validation of the VSC I used as my textbook.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking to them about the, at that time, it was like the five components of the VSC so that they had something to talk about when they went home to their parents and families to say, this is what I'm learning about.
Right.
And that chiropractic is so much more far reaching than back pain or neck pain, and something to talk about and ask questions to their interns about. So that's what I started with. And that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think the students thought I was crazy because I'd be talking about, you know, chemical stressors and, you know, you shouldn't like eat this or eat that. And I remember one student saying to me, you don't give your kids juice. And I said, no. And he said, do your kids even like you? I was like, yeah, of course they like me because they don't know any better.
That's hilarious.
So that was fun. So I did that. And then I used to guest lecture for one of the doctors in pediatrics. And the students were, you know, we had such a good rapport and they loved it so much when I came in there that they actually asked if I would come and teach pediatrics. So that was a great honor.
Cool.
So I started teaching pediatrics and a little bit of OB-GYN. And then after my third child was born, the student clinic kind of morphed. So I went from being on both sides of the street, clinic and academic, to full-time academic. And the students were really interested in, you know this, because we've met in person many times, but I'm not even 5 foot tall.
Yes.
And the students would always ask, how does a 5 foot woman adjust a 200-pound guy?
Right.
You make it look easy. And so they asked me if I would come and start teaching diversified technique. So I made an advanced diversified technique for them at Parker. And that was fun. Seeing them, you know, seeing the students get lit up, getting their first adjustment, or, you know, that clicking where they're like, oh, I feel that now. I get it. I can do that. That right. was exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really hilarious. Cause even, I always have one practice member who always comes to mind because, I'm really trying to get her to go to chiropractic school, but she's so funny because I've been her only chiropractor and in her mind, she's like, so I'm 6'4", 240 pounds. And so she's like, you have to be huge to be a chiropractor. And so I was teasing her. I saw her yesterday and I'm like, uh-huh. Well, once this podcast episode comes out, I'm interviewing someone who's really like way shorter than you. So, yeah. So for you, what would you say to someone like that was interested in being a chiropractor, but they're small and they're worried about their size?
Well, one, I would say that what's in your heart is more important than how big you are. Mm-hmm. Because spreading the message and getting people in your office or in a chiropractor's office so that they can get the help that they need is number one. And you're doing a huge service doing that. And then there are so many ways to practice.
Right.
You can choose so many different techniques. I happen to be, you know, pat myself on the back, but I've had some good teachers and I happen to be a good manual chiropractor.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be.
Right.
You know, there's drop pieces, there's instrument work, there's low force technique, and it's just your dance with the patient. You know, mm-hmm. if it resonates with you and them, they're going to get the results from it. It doesn't have to be a manual, diversified, or Gonstead type of technique. But if you want to do that, size doesn't matter. It's just learning how to leverage your size and your speed.
Right. I usually say, I think it's not because I haven't had experience adjusting as being a small person, but I always say, I think it would be like martial arts where it's all, like you said, it's about speed and it's about centering your gravity and using your body leverage correctly. Right. So.
Absolutely. And I, you know, and no offense to the big male doctors out there, yourself included, but I always say, you know, I find that small female chiropractors are really highly specific.
Yep.
And, that's one of their biggest gifts, you know, because you get in there and you isolate and it's just that you move that one segment that you want to move. It's not, you know, because you're not overpowering someone.
Yeah, totally.
You know, sometimes, right? I mean, I'm sure when you first learned, I can remember one of my classmates is your size.
Yeah.
And we were learning to do like a Carver Bridge, and he adjusted me in the lower thoracics, just knocked the wind out of me because he didn't know his own strength. He, you know, we were just learning. So
totally. Yeah.
I mean, now he's awesome and that wouldn't happen, but you know.
That's okay. Yeah. One of my best friends, he practices in just outside of Kelowna, and he told me he had to practice his chair atlas move on me. Mm-hmm. And like gave me the worst stinger I ever had in my whole life because he was at the very beginning and I still bug him about it. But now he's an amazing adjuster. But we all have humble beginnings, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We all have to start somewhere and learn, right?
Yeah, exactly. So so then you practice. So you're in Parker for 11 years. And didn't you, because I just remember when you came up and you're speaking, did you have some relationship with some hospitals that you'd kind of developed when you were down there?
Well, I had adjusted in a couple of hospitals because I had students whose babies were born and went to the NICU. But what I did was I had a great relationship with a family practitioner in Coppell, Texas, which was where I lived. And she was really on board with chiropractic. And I never thought that I would go into a medical doctor's office and practice. But I was, you know, practicing like within the confines of the school kind of thing. And then I got a green card and I wanted to practice part-time on my own also. So I went to her and said, hey, you know, you have this huge office and, you know, you have rooms that aren't being used. Would you be interested in having a chiropractor in there? And she said, I think that would be awesome. So I ended up renting space from her and having a great relationship with her and her introducing me to other people and giving me referrals and that kind of thing. Because again, she appreciated and valued and understood what it was we did. And I wasn't trying to like fix a problem. Yep. I wasn't trying to diagnose anybody with anything. I was trying to make sure that their nervous system worked 100% as mm-hmm. well as it could so that they could get better.
Yeah. And if you're say a chiropractor is just starting out and they're looking at getting maybe some better relationships in the, either the medical field or other, like mm-hmm. other healthcare professionals, what kind of advice would you give them?
One, I would say that whenever I have a new patient in, and especially because I work in a midwife's office, I rent space from midwives. When the new patient comes in, especially if they've been to an OB-GYN instead of the midwife, what I do is I ask them on their intake form, can I communicate with your doctor about what's going on? So I always send them a thank you so much for sending, even if they didn't send me their patient, thank you right. so much for sending me your patient. This is what I found. This is what's going on. This is what we're working on. Right. Great. And that way they start to understand what it is we're doing. And then after a couple of patients that I've had from that doctor, then I'll go in and say, you know, would you like to meet? Now I'm finding it a little tough here in Waterloo because it's a very conservative town. So I have people coming to me and the doctors are not, I haven't had anybody say my doctor told me not to come.
Right.
So doctors know because I'm sending them things and their patients are coming, but I haven't seen any direct hard evidence of referrals from them yet.
Great.
So we're working on that.
Yeah. And I think that's just a trust thing over time because right. It's funny. I developed a really good relationship with a medical doctor here in Edmonton and we started by playing hockey.
Right.
And then he said, you know, chiropractors aren't so bad and maybe I'll send you some low back people. Yeah, exactly. I won't pass you the puck if you don't send me any pain. No. but he sent me some low back stuff. And then it was interesting that he came in one day into the front of my office and he was in my office and I'm like, uh-oh. Like,
right.
What did someone not like being here or someone complained about it? And he actually had a question about his daughter where she's constipated and hadn't had a bowel movement for over 30 days. And he said, I seriously can't give her any more drugs. Like I can't. And is there anything you can do for her? And so that was where we had a really good conversation about, like you said, we don't fix right. anything, but if we look and if there's any interference, we can remove that. And then a lot of times when the body starts doing what happens, things work. Right. So I did develop that relationship, but that's been like a 15-year thing. So I think right. it's just slow time repetition. And that, actually one of the things too, is I used to do the updates as well. And I do realize that I would explain everything.
Yeah.
And he was like, dude, just tell me they're there and they're getting better. Cause he's like, I don't really care. Like they don't care about chiropractic as much as we do. They just want to know that they can refer someone to you and that's going to be reliable.
Right. And I think that report really, even if they just glance over it, is not really for them to understand chiropractic because it's better to have that conversation like you're saying. Yep. But I think that when they look at it and they realize that we're not idiots, that we actually know what we're doing and that we're making intelligent recommendations and we're taking the time and we're doing a thorough exam, they look and go, oh, yeah, like you know your stuff.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
This might not be quackery.
Right. And I think that's important. And I think it's also important, you know, I have patients, I've had other chiropractors who will come in and see me or chiropractic students, and they'll see me, you know, like you do. I take blood pressure. I listen to, you know, hearts. I look in people's eyes. I do those things and they'll think, but I thought you were a straight chiropractor. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a smart chiropractor because I want something to measure that I can see change, number one. And it's
right.
It's the lens that you look at those things with.
100%.
You know, it's not a medical intervention or a medical diagnostic tool. It's a way of looking at the body and how are they functioning? And then how can I look at it, compare it afterwards?
It's almost so like different really ways. Yeah, it's almost like different ways of observing so right. that we can measure improvement of function.
Right, exactly. Well said.
Oh, you're good at this. That's good. Well, good thing we're recording this. That was awesome. Yeah, exactly. So after... like being down at Parker for 11 years. And then what made you decide to come home to Canada?
Well, we always went to the States with the thought that we're not going to stay there forever.
Right.
And we actually stayed longer than we intended. Mm-hmm. And because we kept getting pregnant, we couldn't figure out how that happened. But so all our family is here in Ontario, and we were finding that we were really missing them, and we were missing Canada, we were missing the change in the weather.
Yes.
Believe it or not, we missed the winter. And it just felt like the time was right, and the kids were getting older. My eldest daughter, when we moved here, was starting grade four. And we thought, you know what, it's now or never. We were living in 1,100 square feet, six of us.
Wow. And
yeah, we learned how to, you know, go up the walls. IKEA was our best friend. but it was time to move. And we knew that we didn't want to buy a house in Texas. So it was like now or never. We're either going or we're staying.
Right.
So we left.
So you went. And so,
we went, yeah.
And then what did you, did you know you're coming back to Waterloo for sure? That's where you're going to go?
Yeah, we had looked at Waterloo once before. Mm-hmm. We had thought about moving once before when I was pregnant with our third. And then we decided we wanted to stay a bit longer. So we had looked at Waterloo. Waterloo's a great kind of mid-sized town between, it's called Kitchener-Waterloo. So between the two towns, there's about 300,000 people, 250,000, 300,000 people. So being from Toronto and then living in Dallas, it's still big enough to be a city and have a Starbucks and all those kinds of things. But small enough that we weren't, you know, in Toronto. And it's a university town, so it's young and it's vibrant, and there's a lot of, it's kind of like Canada's Silicon Valley. There's a lot of tech here and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So a lot of, like, you know, innovation and people interested in alternative things and that kind of thing. So it's a great town to be in.
That's cool. And so did you say, okay, I'm going to buy it, or how did you make the decision that you're going to rent this place? Or how did you evaluate your options? Like, I was always thinking, like, even if now, if I move to a different city, how would you even go about figuring out where to practice?
Well, we knew. So number one, when we started thinking about coming back to Canada, we decided, okay, one of the challenges that we had, it was we wanted to be close to our family. Growing up, I grew up in a very close-knit Italian family. You know, my cousins are my friends. As you know, I have other friends too, but my cousins are my family are my friends, right? We hang out.
Yeah.
So I knew that I wanted to be close enough that my parents and my family were not like vacation family, that they were part of the fabric of my kids' lives. So we had to be somewhere that was within a reasonable driving distance. So we started narrowing it down to, we wanted to be within a 3-hour radius of Toronto, where most of our family is.
Yeah.
And then from there, we kind of narrowed it down because we thought, well, do we really want to drive that far? So Waterloo is about an hour and a bit from my parents' house.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy. We can get there. We can get home, and you know, it's not a big arduous task to go into Toronto and come back out. So that was one thing that we did when we started looking. My husband actually went to University of Waterloo, so he was familiar with Waterloo and really liked it. So that's where we came, and we, you know, checked it out, and we looked at, you know, are the housing prices good? What are the schools like? That kind of thing. So we looked at all that stuff before moving here. Mm-hmm. And then when we moved home, it was really funny. I love my husband for this, because I'm the thinker, right? And sometimes I'm the one who gets stuck in all the detail. Oh, I shouldn't say I'm the thinker, because he's really detail oriented, but he's also gives me that push. You know what Demartini always says, like, it's that balance. When you're in a rut, they help, and vice versa.
Yes.
So I can remember thinking, like, but we have to do this, and we have to do this, and all the excuses that you think, you know, when you talk about the underdog curse, all those things that stop you. And my husband looked at me and said, you know what, Nicole? I don't care if it's the wrong decision, but we just need to make a decision and go. If it's the wrong decision, we'll figure it out and we'll do something else. And so I said, okay, you're right. Let's do it. So, you know, I gave my resignation and, you know, had a moving company. Like, it was really fast from the time that I gave my resignation to the time that we left. I think I gave my resignation maybe with a month notice, and then we were like packed up and
wow.
Gone.
This is like no messing around.
Yeah, no, we made the decision and we went, and we said, okay, well, my parents live in Toronto, so we'll stay with them for the summer, because the schools in Texas stop at the end of May. So they had the extra month. We stayed with my parents for the summer, mm-hmm. and got the kids acclimatized and, you know, spent some great family time and that kind of thing. And during that time, we came to Waterloo several times and looked around for houses. My sister-in-law is a real estate agent, so she helped us.
Oh, perfect.
Place and you know, she did all that kind of stuff for us. And so we bought the house in August of 2013. Mm-hmm. yeah, moved in right before school started in September. I think the kids were here for 2 weeks before school started and just, you know, hit the ground running.
That's awesome. So you found where you're going to live first. And then once you found that out, then you started looking where to practice.
Yeah. My husband was able to, even though he's a chiropractor, he doesn't have a Canadian license, and he went back into computers and he's happy doing what he's doing right now. And he had a job in Texas, and they allowed him to become a consultant and keep his job. So we knew that we had a guaranteed income to come home.
Oh, nice.
So being in Texas, you know, you don't have a long maternity leave. So I took the opportunity to be off from June of 2013, and I didn't start practicing till January of 2014. So I took that time, that 6 months with the kids, and just got everybody settled and into life and into school, and made sure that they were okay. And one of my former classmates, he graduated a couple of years before me. One of the guys who went to that first DE trip with us.
Oh yeah.
Was working in a place that's just 20 minutes, about 20 minutes west of here. And they were looking for a chiropractor. So I went and I checked the space out. And so that's where I started. And I was just doing 2 days a week, and it just wasn't the right fit. And I had joined a group to help with breastfeeding problems in the region. So I was a breastfeeding buddy, they call it. And through that group, this opportunity came up with the midwives in Uptown Waterloo, which is kind of like downtown Waterloo. We call it Uptown. And there was a space for rent. So I went in and talked to the midwives and said, you know, this is what I do, and I'm interested in your space. And they loved it. They loved the opportunity. So, and I've been there ever since.
That's awesome. And it's, and so how long have you been there now?
I started there just 3 days a week in July of 2014. And then in 2015, July 2015, I went full time. I left the other place and just made Blue Hair and Midwives my home. So I've been there full time since 2015.
That's great. And so how did you grow when you first got there? Was it mostly through referrals, or did you go out and network, or how did you get things off the ground?
I was actually quite pleased that the majority of my patients from this town, New Hamburg, which is a further 20 minutes, stayed with me. And I had a website built, and I just kind of put my name out there and just kind of talked to people wherever I went. Mm-hmm. And I can remember getting my first patient at Blue Heron. I was so excited. So she was great, but she wasn't a patient of the midwives. And then the midwives started referring to me, and then those people started referring their friends and family to me. So I really, quite honestly, have not done a lot of outside marketing.
Yeah,
it's been a great relationship with the midwives. So they refer a ton. And here in Ontario, the midwives have rights at the hospital. So, you know, all the midwives in the region all come to the same hospital to help their moms deliver if they choose to have a hospital birth. So they start to talk to each other. So now I get, you know, referrals from midwives that I haven't even met yet, which is great.
That's awesome. So,
you know, and it's also great if you can get like one or two teachers in your practice.
Yeah.
Especially elementary school teachers, then they, you know, they talk and they help you get in schools and that kind of thing.
Oh, so, that's awesome. Yeah. So it's all about kind of getting that connection with people so that you can grow it from the inside out. Okay.
And the more that you, like you said, with the hockey experience, right? The more that you have that personal relationship and you just be your as most authentic self as you can be, then they get to know you and trust you,
right?
You know, even if they are kind of scared about chiropractic, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, ignorant about chiropractic, then they trust you and they start to come in and that kind of thing.
That's what, and a question, because you have all the kids and you're a mom and you're working full time, you know, there'd be a lot of female chiropractors out there trying to figure out how to get balance. So what kind of recommendations would you have for those?
This is a funny question. And your lovely wife, Brandy, said something that I thought was so wise, which she often does. But the particular thing was, I think balance is truly an illusion.
Yeah.
There's really no such thing as balance. I cannot give equal balance to being a wife, being a mom, running a business, that kind of thing. So I think it's more, the advice that I usually give is, what does success look like to you? What are your priorities in your life? And I know for me, as much as I love chiropractic and I love practicing, my family is my most, my highest value.
Right.
So it's most important to me to be a great wife and a great mom. So those are the things that I do first. And so I built my practice around that. I know that I wanted to be able to take my kids to school sometimes, and I want to be there at the end of the day to pick them up, even if it can't be, or even if I choose that it's not every day. You know, I want to be able to have nights that I can put a meal on the table. I want to have nights that I can take them to their lessons and so on and so forth. So you can see them in the background. They just came in. So all of those things are really important to me. So when I put my business plan together and the hours that I work together, that's what I did first.
Yes. Right?
And then I thought, okay, well, within that, now what hours do I want to practice? So I work Monday morning until 2 o'clock. So Monday and Fridays, my husband takes the kids to school.
Yeah. And it's like, you have husbands. That's awesome.
That's how I do it. That's,
that's the secret.
And I'm there to pick them up. And on Tuesdays, I don't go into the office. I work from home. So I do all that kind of like website and that kind of stuff from home.
Yeah.
And so I'm there to take them to school and pick them up and go on field trips when I want to. Wednesdays, I work a full day. So I take them to school in the morning and my husband picks them up at night.
Yeah.
And I'm there until the evening. So I'm usually seeing patients until 6:30. So I have some nights that I'm there for the after hours, you know, the after work crowd.
Yeah.
And Thursdays, I do the same.
So you just make sure it works with everything else, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite honestly, if there was a situation that happened that my kids, something happened in our family that my kids needed me more, then I would scale back those hours because that's my highest value. I want to be a mom.
Right. So it's really about being clear on yourself, right?
That's
like
right.
Being true to yourself. And then it's less stressful because you're doing things the way you want to do it, right?
Exactly. And my business, I'm pretty, I'm almost 100% full every day that I'm in the office. So I'm there and it's busy and I love doing what I'm doing and I'm giving lots of information and connecting with people. And then I'm home.
Right.
And I focus on being home when I'm home.
Right.
Right. And that will change. And I think that's the other thing too, to realize as a working mom, that whatever your definition of success or your idea of practice is right now may not be the same in 5 years. Right. So my youngest is 5 and he's going into senior kindergarten or grade 1 in September. So in the next year or two, my idea of an ideal practice is going to change because they're not going to need me in the same way that they need me now.
Right.
Right. And then I get to mix it all up and do something different, right? And blow it up and make it look different.
It's just like a healthy nervous system, right? You're just evolving and adapting and changing to depending on what's going on.
Absolutely.
Now, have you ever got off balance? Did you ever not have the values things figured out? I always like to hear that, those kind of things. This is probably from learning experience, probably.
Yeah, I would say, well, and more than once I've been like that, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there are days that when we first came home, so there's a couple times. I had it once really burnt out between Maya and Noah. So between my 3rd and 4th, and I was working at Parker full time and I was practicing part time outside of school and I was starting to do speaking. And I can remember coming home some nights, driving up to the apartment and sitting in my car. And I would say, I have to sit in my car for 10 minutes before I can go upstairs because I need to decompress before I take on the next thing.
Right.
And I was tired all the time. And I was, you know, even though I liked teaching, I just couldn't keep it up. I was tired. I was burnt out. I was not my vibrant, healthy self. And I wasn't able to give, you know, to those roles that I wanted to be. And I can remember crying one night thinking, I'm a crappy mom. I'm a crappy wife. I'm a crappy clinic doctor. Because I just didn't have the energy to give to all of those things. And that made me sit down and say, okay, you got to take stock. What do you want to do? Right. And that was really one of my big first lessons on, it's not really true that you can have balance. It's true that you can choose what you want to do. And that time I decided that I was going to stop the outside practice and just practice at school and help the students at school and be a great mom and a great doctor and a great wife.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And then I can remember when we first came back to Canada, you know, even though it was a great move and it was exciting, it's also very stressful to move and move your kids and move your house and all that kind of stuff. So I can remember after the first year of being back in practice, trying to juggle everything, again, not really being completely happy where I was. And it was different this time because it wasn't so much that I was unhappy in what I was doing, but I didn't have the same connections. You know, right. So when I was at Parker, it was easy to be in my chiropractic bubble because right. I had lots of chiropractors who thought the way I did around me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now I was back in private practice and I didn't know the chiropractors in the area and I was feeling very isolated, right? I didn't have those, you know, abilities to have a mastermind with someone or that kind of thing. So that time was really about reconnecting and realizing that I needed to do some things for me. And I needed to be able to take off the mom, the wife, the doctor hat and be Nicole again.
Yeah.
And how do I be Nicole? And how do I go hang out with my friends and reconnect with my friends and reconnect with some chiropractors in the area? Getting myself adjusted, making sure that I found someone that I could feel comfortable going to and getting adjusted once a week and that kind of thing. So that's how I did it.
And do you have a basically like a self-care routine now that you always make sure that you're kind of looking after? Because a lot of it with the chiropractors we talk to, they get burnt out because they just stop. They get busy and they stop looking after right. themselves and you can't right. give away what you don't have. So how do you do that?
Well, one, it's always a work in progress and it's always mm-hmm. changing.
Totally.
So I try really hard to, and I don't always do it well, but I try. number one, I get adjusted at least once a week.
Right.
So I have a friend that I trade with and we adjust each other once a week and that I almost never deviate from because if I don't get adjusted, number one, I feel like if I'm not walking my talk, then I have no right to say it to someone else.
Right.
And I know that if my nervous system is not functioning at the best it can be, then I'm not giving to myself and then I can't give to anybody else. So I do that. And then I try to get in bed early.
Right.
So I try to have lights out by 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I like to make sure that I go upstairs and read a little bit first before the lights are out. So I'm just, you know, kind of everything's just calming down. So I like to read and I like to do gratitude journal.
Yes.
So I love that little 5-minute gratitude journal because it's quick and it's easy and it sort of keeps me on task. And all my kids have gratitude journals too. So we're trying to practice that as a family.
Oh, that's cool.
And then, yeah. So I gave my older two have the gratitude journal, just like the 5-minute one like I do. And then the younger two have a kid-friendly one that was actually put out by a fellow chiropractor here in the area. And they get to like draw pictures and color in it and that kind of thing to do their gratitude. So that's really fun.
Cool.
And then exercise, getting
yeah,
started, right. That's a big thing, and that's my hardest piece is getting regular exercise because I find that I either have to choose to get up early in the morning to get it done, mm-hmm. or you know as soon as I come home. So those are the things that I try to concentrate on the most.
Are you also focused on connecting because you're so connected with chiropractors back then? Do you make sure you get a point of connecting with some chiropractors in your new town?
Yeah, I do have a couple of chiropractors that I connect with regularly. Mm-hmm. And I also joined the Waterloo Chiropractic Society here.
Yeah.
That's kind of hard because they're also a fairly mechanistic group. So sometimes I go, but I don't really get anything out of the speakers so much.
Right, you know? Yeah.
But I try to go because I just want to meet the other people.
Right. You
know, and connect with them. And it's interesting because there's a lot of young chiropractors from CMCC because it's so close that are very mechanistic and allopathic. And then there's all the old docs, right, who
yeah.
are, what about subluxation and why aren't they, you know, and it's really funny. It's a funny dynamic to kind of come into.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, we're getting close to the end of our of the show. So I usually like to leave the last couple of minutes to all of our podcast guests to just give a few words of wisdom to the underdog nation out there. Chiropractors, you know, they're kind of feel isolated. They might be a mom with like trying to balance home and life and all that kind of stuff, or just frustrated because their practice isn't where they're at. What kind of encouraging words could you leave them with?
One, I would say, define what success is for you.
Right.
That was, I think, my biggest piece was to realize that even though I had practiced in the 300 a week offices and that kind of thing, that what's the most important thing to me? Because even when I was busier, I wasn't necessarily happy. But now that I can do the things that I can remember going to work sometimes thinking, I'm leaving my kids with a nanny doing the things that I should be doing, that I want to do.
Right.
And now I get to do those things because I've made that choice. So, and being happy with that. So that's the biggest thing for me. And I think that really making sure as a mom entrepreneur, that you take the time to take care of yourself and connect with other women. Yeah. And I know, especially this is my inner Dr. Hull. Dr. Hull always talks about how important it is for women to connect with each other. We need to talk.
Right.
We need to so I have a group of ladies here that sometimes I go out with on a Monday night to Milestones because they have appetizers and whatever. And you know what? We just laugh and have a good time. And just be yourself and you know, take off some of those hats and do that self-care and connect with other people. Those are the biggest things for me that have helped me over the time.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's good. I think it's so important because especially to realize the difference between men and women, right? How men can kind of, you know, chug it off on a treadmill and kind of burn off steam, and women just need to kind of, it almost like they have to diffuse it a little bit slower, with those connections.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story between Matt and I. We have a little deal because he's, you know, hardwired to fix things.
Yeah.
And I like to talk about it. So early on, we've been together for 22 years. So early on, he would want to fix things and I would get frustrated because I just wanted to talk about it. And so we made this deal that he now says to me, "Hun, do you want me to say anything or do you just want me to listen?" So he'll always ask me, do you want my advice or do you just want me to listen? And it's funny because I'll always start with, "I just want to talk. I just need to get this off my chest. I just need you to listen to me." And he'll say, "Okay." And then by the end of it, because he's given me permission to do that and he's stayed quiet and listened, then I'll say to him, "You know what? I would really appreciate your input here."
Yes.
And then I ask for his advice, and then there's no contention because I've invited him into that conversation, mm-hmm. and he's honored me by listening to me. And that's been a really wonderful thing in our relationship.
Well, that's awesome. Well, hey, I think a lot of married couples could use that advice. I think I think I've done that a few too many times as well. So I'm learning as well. We're married. Like, once you get these years under your belt, you start to kind of figure out how to do it right.
And you know what? The other piece of advice that I would give, just like marriage that we're talking about, is that every day takes commitment and work.
Yeah.
Right. It's not going to come to you for free. You can't, you know, hang up your shingle and expect people to just come in.
Yes.
So perseverance and mm-hmm. commitment is really important in everything that we do, mm-hmm. right? To work at it every day.
That's great. Well, everybody listen out there. You got to work at it, right?
That's right.
It's funny when it comes down to it, it's a lot of work. Like me and Brandy talk a lot and we're like, holy smokes, we're just setting up a screening this weekend. And we're like, I've done so much work in the past doing stuff like this to get the name out, but it's just, you just do it. And, and that's how you get the results, but no results happen without any work.
That's right. If you keep your why in front of you,
yeah.
then it doesn't feel like work. And that's the great thing about doing what you love is that every day, even though you're working at it, you love it and it's fun. So it doesn't really feel like work.
Yes, totally.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks,
Nicole,
for having me. It was fun.
Appreciate it. So everybody out there, we covered lots of stuff. So we talk about pediatrics and practice and marriage and balance and self-care. And I think we can all take a few lessons of that and implement it in our life so that we can get out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.